Hey everyone, this is Belinda Kaur. Welcome back to the Boost AEC podcast, where we dive into the world of construction and explore the stories of people and companies who are shaping the future of our industry. We've got another exciting podcast for you today. I'm speaking with Lucas Evans, CEO and founder of E3 Agriculture. Thanks for joining us, Lucas.
Totally. Excited to be here. Thank you for all you do, Belinda.
Thank you. So I came across your product through LinkedIn. That's one of my sources to find really cool new products. Your company produces plant-based building materials like bio-based rebar and other hemp-based products too.
Yep.
So before we dive into your products, and I would love to learn more about how they're made and the complexities involving it and the advantages over traditional building materials. But before we talk about that, let's talk about you. How did you get into this field of alternative, low-carbon, agriculture-based building materials?
Totally. Yeah, I think the field is a good place to start. I grew up in Texas.
Oh, the pun, I get it. That's funny. Okay.
Yeah. And my family, historically, we were farmers, and I grew up on the farm. And unfortunately, we sold that land when I was pretty young, or most of it, and watched it be turned into houses. And, you know, those were market factors. But it really got me thinking about, you know, turning farmland into houses, and if perhaps we could literally do that. And so that's kind of a concept, seed to shelter. And so over the past really 5 years, I've set out to build products in a company that use industrial agriculture products and then converts those into composites using binders and whatever to basically grow our own homes. And I'm an environmental scientist from college, and obviously we know we have a big issue in the construction sector and in agriculture. And if we could kind of blend those, we could actually make construction a solution rather than a problem.
When you talk about the problems in construction, you're talking about the large carbon footprint and the use of like concrete and steel and stuff that is not really environmentally friendly building materials.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, concrete alone, or steel actually, is by itself about 8% of our carbon footprint. And so that's why when we were looking at materials, rebar kind of stuck out to me. You know, there's great insulated products, and but no one's really tried to take on the 800-pound gorilla, which is steel. And so we took a shot at it, and we've got a really good product, I think. So
when you were developing the early stages of your company, when you were developing this bio-based rebar material, were there other alternative materials that you looked at, other solutions? And like, how did you filter down? There's so many things you could have made. Like, there are people who have gone down the path of making hemp blocks or hempcrete or hemp insulation. How did you get to this path of tackling steel rebar, trying to find a more eco-friendly version of steel rebar? Because it seems like, not to dismiss the work of other companies, but it's a pretty big problem to tackle because there are so many structural implications that go along with developing bio-based rebar.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, for one, it was certainly, there hadn't been any real developments.
The world, not just in the States.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, watching the land be developed and the amount of rebar that goes into foundations, for example, is incredible. What they've done now is they do epoxy coated rebars, to prevent the swelling and a lot of these other things, the deterioration, and that really still doesn't come close. You know, if you get one little nick, in that coating, then ultimately that rebar is going to break down. And so it wasn't just me. You know, I've worked with some really brilliant chemists who developed some of the binders. And then we've adapted FRP technology, so fiber-reinforced polymers. And we've just started to increase the amount of bio-based materials in that. And also from like an infrastructure and climate change point of view, you know, we're having to start to adapt to sea level rise and the impacts of ocean and saltwater environments. And so, you know, there's no way that steel can ever, you know, steel and salt and water don't get along. Yep. So kind of rethinking that. And then if we can make, if we can replace the rebar, then everything else will be a little bit easier, you know?
All right, so let's dive into the specifics of the rebar. What is the product made out of? And do you have any samples you could show us just so we can visualize what it looks like?
Yeah, totally. So it's an adaptation of FRP, fiber-reinforced polymer. I've got one right here. So we currently use fiberglass roving and then combine it with this biopolymer that is super high-performing. And it's got the exact properties that you want from a ductility standpoint, durability, obviously, and it's completely innate. So some people think like, oh, well, if it's bio-based, it'll biodegrade. And that's not the case here. These things are meant to last forever. They're not going to react with any things in the environment. And then we've, you know, started to play with the fiber itself. And so here is actually a hemp fiber rebar.
What's the difference between the bio-based one and the hemp one?
So we've just replaced the glass fiber in this one with hemp fiber and basalt in this one.
Got it.
And so this is not quite commercially ready. This one is. It's been tested multiple times, used in real world. University of Miami's done some stuff. And then we work with Texas A&M to get in with the Army Corps of Engineers and some of these projects. So
you were talking about, like, when you were developing all these products, you have an incredible team of scientists and really smart people that have developed these. So it's not just employees in your company. You'll have teamed up with a lot of universities too to come up with these solutions.
Yeah. You know, universities, professors at those universities who developed them in a lab and then needed to get them into, you know, the private sector so that we can start to, you know, invest in these and build out manufacturing capacities. And we produce this ourselves in Florida, but we're also open to working with other existing manufacturers and just kind of translating information.
How large is your facility in Florida, and how many feet of this can you produce per day?
Yeah, so it's only about 8,000 square foot facility, not huge, which is part of what we're trying to do, is get rid of that giant steel mill that you think of and have more localized production. And we have two production lines that at top capacity, we can do about 11,000, 12,000 feet a day. So roughly 2 miles. And then we try to keep, you know, a bunch of inventory and move it. But the beauty of it is it can be turned on and turned off pretty easily. It's not something that has to be constantly fed and high energy. I mean, it's a pretty simple process once you kind of understand it.
And that's different than just producing FRP rebar, because those facility, are there components in the FRP rebar that mean that the machines can never be shut down?
I'm not necessarily FRP, but talking about the steel rebar manufacturing. And certainly, I mean, we could scale that facility up to a huge level, but we like to have kind of a smaller to mid-sized modular production model. So something that we could actually ship, if there was like a large bridge project far away from somewhere, we could send the actual production system and the raw materials, and you could produce them on site.
I see. So how many projects has this? Before we talk about projects, let's talk about how this differs in terms of strength to steel and FRP rebar.
Yep. So just compared to conventional, like the number three steel rebar, we pull about 1.8 times that strength from a tensile.
Wow.
So it's stronger, and then it's about 1/4 the weight of steel.
The cost comparison? I understand you're not early on, so...
Yeah, off the shelf at Home Depot, we're actually competitive. In larger quantities, people buy it by the pound, and it's kind of hard to compete there. But we try to be cost competitive. And certainly with epoxy coated rebar, we're at or below that in terms of cost.
So your material does not need to be epoxy coated because it's not susceptible to rusting the way steel rebar is.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, so that's another added advantage over everything else that's in it. What about comparisons to FRP?
So, I mean, they perform similarly. In that way, we're just trying to make it more sustainable. And we are working on a life cycle analysis right now. It's taking a little bit of time because it's, a peer-reviewed scientific study, but we anticipate that it'll be about 30 to 40% less in terms of carbon emissions than conventional FRP, which is already better than steel. But the chemicals that are used and some of the processes in conventional FRP is not very healthy. So we kind of went after that.
I visited the World of Concrete Conference in Vegas earlier this year. I think that was back in January. And I saw at least four or five companies that were promoting FRP. It was obviously it kind of became popular back in 2020, 2021 when we saw fluctuations in steel prices. People were looking for alternatives. And there are a lot of big dogs in the industry who have jumped on this FRP train. Are those your biggest competitors right now? Or is there a different market that you're targeting that really sees the value in your product?
I don't think that competition is a necessary issue right now. We want to see more people enter this space. But for example, I'm from outside of Austin, Texas, and the city of Austin actually just put in some code changes or basically to meet their 2030 emissions targets. They're going to require that all building materials used within the city's projects have to have a life cycle analysis and have to have, at least an effort towards being more sustainable. So that's definitely where we're looking at. And then certainly anywhere on the ocean or exposed to salt water, kind of identifying these markets, as opposed to just trying to compete with any concrete model
So how
that.
does FRP perform in those areas in coastal regions? Are they as susceptible to rusting or they're not because they don't have any metal in them?
Yeah, correct. So we've delivered projects in about seven different states, all different climates from frozen places in the north to like seawalls in Hawaii. We did a small seawall project, a retaining wall. And not just the rusting, but when it gets hot or cold, the cracking of the concrete occurs. And so a larger customer that, or a sector rather, of our consumers is in Texas. We have like troughs, water troughs that are out in the farmland. And these are, they're year round, and that's what the water stays in for the animals to come and drink from. But Texas, we have fluctuations in temperature, 50, 60 degrees over the course of a few days. And that can cause that steel to expand and contract, which then cracks the concrete, and then your water drains out. So
That's a
that's,
cool application. Didn't think about that.
I actually did not either. Somebody reached out to me about it, and they spent their whole company is around basically fixing these ponds because in Texas, water is, everything, especially in West Texas if you're a rancher. So it's
So
just
how do
rain.
you scale up your business? Are you looking at a licensing model? Because I assume your product is protected through trademarks and there's a lot of proprietary information because you have developed something that's completely unique that I don't assume anyone else in the world has developed. So how do you plan on scaling up? Are you looking at, like I said, licensing methods so other people can create these smaller factories around the states?
Yeah, exactly. Trying to go for that distributed manufacturing model, either through licensing or the purchase and setup of one of these FRP production lines. If we want to talk price, somewhere around $350,000, and we've got pro formas that basically, if done right, you could pay that off in the first year just from the production. Yeah, we're all about, collaboration and partnerships. We are protected with the components in the rebar, but beyond that, we're happy to collaborate. And even people who are making FRP rebar, reach out, and we can certainly help you.
Yeah, create a more eco-friendly version of FRP rebar. That's a cool collaboration right there. I have to ask you, when you were creating this bio-based rebar and then the hemp-based rebar, was there a particular hurdle that you overcame that kind of changed the momentum of your business? Like, it can be a positive hurdle or a negative experience that, or maybe changed the way you thought about the product itself or the future of the company. Because you've tackled a really complex, big problem. It's probably not been just an easy ride for the last, 5-6 years that you've been developing this.
No. Just on upfront, manufacturing is not very attractive to investment and even banks. So there's risk associated with that. But I think one of the positives is realizing that some of the larger institutions like Texas A&M have been doing research on this, because it's no secret that steel corrodes. And we see this happen, unfortunately, like the hotels in Miami and, some of these bridges. That's not going to be unique. I mean, these are problems everywhere that everyone needs to solve. And so there's a ton of research that's been done on alternatives. And they've even gone a step further towards, using just purely natural fibers in this, in concrete. I mean, even the Romans, dating back, for thousands of years, people have used, bio-based fibers in concrete. It's not necessarily a new thing. We've just combined those with, polymers and in a little bit more controlled environment. And so I will say that concrete and construction as a whole are very conservative industries, and not really open.
Resistant to change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And to that point, engineers even more so are reluctant to approve and sign off on certain materials, whatever they may be.
Because there are lives at stake, and there's a lot more than just a tech-based industry. Like, when you're talking about investments, I assume it's not as easy to get investments as it would be in if you just developed an app or something to calculate the carbon footprint of your building.
Right. They'll be calculating our rebar into those models, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, it's taken really 5, really 7 years of just research and testing and getting those specifications down so that we can translate that to an engineer to start to adapt their plans and design. So
do you see your business being at a really pivotal point right now where you've seen a lot of acceptance by engineers and by the industry as a whole? And do you see a lot of interest coming in from the residential side or the commercial side? And do you see yourself pivoting into those fields?
Yeah, totally. And we've actually just recently teamed up with a company who does residential construction. And being able to kind of self-perform, we've had some issues with, it's scattered when you're trying to sell to an individual contractor or concrete company. Small, they're good. They want to do it. They want to try.
But they want certainty. They want cost certainty, quantity certainty. They probably want a bulk order too.
Yes. And that's, sometimes we've gotten like orders for 2 million feet and, versus like, there's kind of a sweet spot. You don't want to do small projects that take a lot of time. And then, larger companies want to do huge projects at a time. And so finding that kind of middle ground and being able to control those projects has been something that we've had to take on. And so we, now have an engineer on staff, and we, are kind of focused on our residential right now.
Are you all looking at developing other products under your company, E3 Agriculture, to maybe supplement or attract more investors or interest into this bio-based building materials?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of what I was mentioning is, we put together a pretty nice portfolio of products, standalone products that, concrete, insulation, adhesives, But to make real progress in each one of those takes time, marketing. So that's what we've teamed up with here in Charleston, South Carolina, is to actually offer the entire house, you know, soup to nuts. And that way we're just selling sustainable houses rather than selling sustainable products, and kind of going that Tesla model of self-perform, you know, rather than trying to have, you know, safe tires, we're just going to sell you the whole car.
Yeah. That would be cool. So would that mean teaming up with companies like Hempwood and Hempitecture and like selling all hemp-based or other bio-based building materials under one roof?
Yep.
That's awesome. That would be so cool.
Well, we're after. Yeah. So
there's this company up in the Northeast, 475 Building Supply, and I think they've taken a different kind of approach where they're trying to only sell high performance building materials. So if you all have an approach where you all sell only low carbon, sustainable, agriculture based building materials, that it's like a one stop shop. You want to build something eco-friendly, come to this one place and we provide all the solutions for you.
Yeah, that's it. We're actually building a demo right now that we're going to be taking to Hardware Huddle in North Carolina. And then we're going to do a couple conferences after that. And so, you know, we'll be in Dallas in April for the EarthX conference.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to connect then, and anybody listening, it'd be a great opportunity to come. Like I said, the concept is seed to shelter. So, you know, we want to be able to offer an entire house that was grown sustainably. And, you know, we talk about regenerative ag all the time, but what about regenerative construction?
Yeah, I think there's a conference in either North Carolina or South Carolina coming up soon. It's about deconstructing buildings.
Whoa.
And it's about thinking about, like we said, the entire life cycle of building. What happens after a building has, at the end of its useful life? Because right now, everything just goes straight to a landfill. It's completely unsustainable. But is there a way somehow to create a profitable business model where a building can be deconstructed and the parts can be upcycled and used for other building materials in the future?
Totally. Well, I would encourage anybody listening to check out Build With Constructs or buildconstructs.com. So that's the company that we've teamed up with here, and they take like Lego type houses that you can stand up and take down and adapt. I actually have a little pamphlet right here, but yeah, all the pieces are standardized, much like Legos. And then we've just incorporated sustainable materials into that. So
very cool. I'm going to have to check that out after our discussion.
Totally.
So I have one last question for you, and I try to ask all our guests this. What advice would you have for a young professional who wants to change our industry in the way you have, like go down the path of building alternative building or inventing alternative building materials?
Yeah, I think do your homework, find some brilliant scientists. There is a ton of, like I said, research has been done on this, and a lot of this is not new. So you don't have to do everything that you may think. You have to be willing to work with others, partner up, and make sure you have a good business plan and organization. But the solutions are out there, and there is an obvious demand for it. Just not getting caught up in the overwhelming demand of a lot of this, because you know you can have one project derail the whole thing, and if you fail on that, so start small and work your way up, I guess would be one way.
Well, that's really good advice. Thank you for sharing that. I guess that's just to piggyback on what your answer was when talking about being overwhelmed with the building construction industry. Like we said, it's so resistant to change. There's such large players in the industry. How have you in E3 Agriculture or anyone else who wants to create their own alternative building materials company, how do you create a name for yourself? Because there are people interested in bio-based building materials, in healthy buildings, in high-performance buildings. But the noise created by these big dogs in the industry that have such a strong grip on the way buildings are constructed, how do you make yourselves known and make a presence in such a competitive industry?
Yeah, I mean, for us personally, it's a stark commitment to sustainability.
It's like from the stick beginning. To your goal, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, a lot of companies claim that what they're doing is already, you know, sustainable, and a lot of it is. So don't knock the big guys, right? You know, I think we're all trying to do the right thing, but I think just having, you know, a pure commitment and a goal in mind, and then backing that up with scientific, you know, data and research that you've done, because they're going to dig it up, you know, it's going to get found. And so make sure you've done your homework.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I look forward to hopefully meeting you at EarthX later this month and seeing the new hemp-based company or bio-based company that you create in the future.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Lucas, for sharing your knowledge and your experience and everything with us. Hope to have you on the podcast sometimes in the future.
Yep. Can't wait. Thank you so much.
Thanks.